This is Arch of ArcherRadio.com. Today is Thursday, October 12th, 2006. On today's show, I am actually going to play the audio clip that the boyfriend and I recorded last Friday night, where he does his lecture on the Gilded Era. So you'll get to hear that, but first I want to play some voicemails from Ramble Redhead and from John Ong. And then we will go right into the audio that the boyfriend recorded, and you'll get to hear his whole speech on the Gilded Era. And I should say that that was the first multiple-person recording I did with the new binaural microphone, so I was really just testing those out, but I went ahead and recorded his whole lecture. And at first he told me I couldn't post it, but then he said I could cut and paste, so I went ahead and did that, and that's what you're going to hear. And that will be the last part of the show. So listen to these voicemails from Ramble Redhead and from John Ong. And thank you both for sending those voicemails. I appreciate it. So here we go.
Oh, Archer, this is Tom, a.k.a. the Ramble Redhead. I'm listening to episode 300, and I was just so crushed that you didn't remember me at all. But I'm just kidding. But I just want to say again, congratulations on your wonderful, fantastic 300th episode. That's amazing. And like you said, there's only a few other podcasts that actually met that, and that's awesome. And one of these days, I'm going to get that level, and I just want to say, you have to be pretty proud of yourself and your accomplishments. So keep up the great work, and I will still keep listening, even though you forgot all about me. I'll talk to you later. Bye. Hey Archer, this is Tom. Just wanted to leave you a quick message to let you know that I listened to the couple of gang shows about Survivor and Amazing Race, and I thought that was really good. And the only thing was that I don't know why, but when Big Fatty's on, it's like really soft on him but loud on everybody else. So I just thought I'd make a comment, but I had to keep adjusting the volume to listen to it. But I was just curious if that was a Skype thing or what. But the other thing I want to let you know is I heard your new recording with your new mic, and I just want to let you know that please don't open letters again. It was loud. But that's my only negative comment. But I thought the show was really good, and I really liked that program that you talked about, and it sounds really cool. But then I felt bad because it wasn't cooperating with you, so. Because I have a lot of movies and books and CDs, and I think it'd be a great way to, you know, keep them database going. But I'm going to have to give it a try. So thanks for that tip. You've been giving me a lot of great ideas over the last few months, and I really appreciate it. And I was just teasing you about that comment that I emailed you out today, or last night, about. So I hope you're doing good, and keep on listening. I did post a new show. So if you could give it a listen and let me know what you think. And I hope you have a great day. Okay, bye-bye.
Hey, Archer. This is John Ong from Online Podcast. I have some feedbacks regarding your binaural microphone show. I really liked it. And I sort of giggle when you were wondering if you were putting it on correctly. I struggle with that. And I think so did Adam from This Boy Elroy. This is how it is. You can always take a picture and show it to us, and then we'll probably tell you whether or not you're putting it in correctly, or them in correctly, really. And think of it as a comma, right? The ones that if you got the same one I did, think of it as a comma, and the fat end of the comma would actually be on the bottom. So when you write a comma, the skinny tail actually goes upward. It points to the sky, and then the fat part points to the ground. And the diaphragm actually has to phase out. So the black dot has to phase out. And if you if you have any, you know, doubt, just take a picture and post it there, and we can take a look at the microphone and actually let you know whether or not it is in there in your ears correctly. I myself, however, is a little bit different. I think I probably told you this. I am related to the Thai elephants, and therefore I have gigantic ears. And I actually needed to use the sponge, the windscreen sponge, to actually prevent the microphones from falling off my ears. So I have huge, huge, huge ears. And another thing is your Delicious Library. I was also addicted to Delicious Library. I remember getting it the day it was launched, and I was so excited about it. I came home and I keep scanning stuff. You know, really the main attraction for me is to be able to use my eyesight as a scanner. That was all exciting for me. And here's a tip. After doing several hundreds of them in there, we realized that it's kind of hard to, when you look up a book, it's like, oh, I have that book, but where is it on in the room? And we have a library, and we have several bookshelves, and wall bookshelves, and it's kind of hard to figure out where they are. And so don't forget to create shelves, and then drag those items into the appropriate shelf so that you would remember exactly where that book is coming from. So I thought that might be helpful before you scan too many thousands of your collection in there. And by the way, one of the guys who used to be a part of the Delicious Library, I forgot his name, Mike something. Mike, I don't even know how to pronounce his name. It's M-A-T-A-S. Mike Matas is what I would call it. But I don't really know how to pronounce his name. M-I-K-E-M-A-T-A-S. Mattis, probably. MikeMattis.com. MikeMattis.com. And he's such a talented designer. You know, he created really, really good looking logos. Logos too, but little applications icons. That was like his main thing. And a cutie pie also. Very young, very talented, and a cutie pie. Check that out, and I hope you're enjoying your Delicious Library, and thank you for letting me take over your show for another, good God, almost 4 minutes. Sorry! Bye, Archer.
So this is your chance to give your lecture on the 1880s, and you're just...
You're not recording this.
I am so recording this.
I told you.
What'd you tell me?
Wait a minute. I started my lecture on the Gilded Era.
I was doing the dishes.
I'm bored already.
I was doing the dishes.
You said you were bored.
Well, this is more for the people who listen to the show than for me.
I think this is more for your two conservative listeners who are also extremely attractive.
Well, okay. Don't you want to please all the listeners?
I don't know if they're interested in my lecture on the Gilded Era.
I don't know. The only thing is, I'm not so sure that this is, as I've told you before, this is real more of a test thing, because I don't know how
if
the other voice...
If you post this, I am going to smash you.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Well, first of all, you'll be wasting a very brilliant lecture. I started to tell you about the similarities between the big pockets of the 1880s, the Vanderbilts, Carnegie, Rockefeller,
Mellon,
you name it,
Mellon,
Conklin, the big families in New York. They were contributing to both political parties, hedging their bets. So, if we start with the Harrison-Blaine election, in which Blaine had more, much like Bush and Gore, Blaine had the popular vote, Harrison had the electoral vote. Who might have been the better president? It might have been Blaine, but Harrison won. Well, why? Well, Harrison was backed by the big pockets of the day. Even though these corporate giants of the day, and these men like the Rockefellers, the Vanderbilts, the Carnegies, they started as bookkeepers or shoeshine boys. These were not men born into wealth. They made their wealth. They became wealthy. They acquired the factors or means of earning these large sums of money. Very much like Soros or Bill Gates or some of the giants we have today. Well, so they realize that their well-being laid with one party predominantly, but they were also funding the other. They were predominantly Republican, but they were also funding the Democratic candidate.
Why?
In case the Democratic candidate won, they had a candidate in office. So when Grover Cleveland, for example, won his first term, Carnegie who said, well, what difference will it make? Because we have funded both parties. And this is going on today. ExxonMobil is predominantly funding the Republican Party, but they're sending a check to the Democrats too. And we all know it. So the men we have in office answer to corporate executives, executive officers, not to the American people. And that's the similarity in a nutshell. Without getting into mugwumps, stalwarts, the factions that existed back then, the scandals of the day, and much like today in the 1880s, 1890s, even the media, we talk about the Hearst newspapers, the Spanish-American War, there was no Spanish attack on the Maine. We don't know why the Maine exploded. A theory is that some circumstance on that ship caused it to explode in Havana Harbor. But the Spaniards had no design to attack American ships. It was a fifth-rate power, a declining power. They would not have started a war with the United States or anyone.
Kind of like Iraq today?
Very much like Iraq. There was no smoking gun in Havana Harbor. We created it. The American press, the Hearst press, created it. And why? Well, the Dole Fruit Company wanted the American government to overthrow the Spanish government there and create a Caribbean empire. So the Spanish government was defeated there. But this time it was the Spanish Bourbons. They were defeated there very quickly. They didn't want to wage war against America. But it was done. Cuba became not an American colony, not an American territory, but certainly American business interests were there. So it was a quasi-American government there. Same time we got Hawaii as it was an independent territory. Liliuokalani was the last monarch there. The Dole Fruit Company dominant there too. And the Philippines. And here's a lesson there. We got the Philippines from Spain in 1898. Well, by 1904, we were stuck in a rebellion with Aguinaldo, the Filipino, leading the charge. That was a very long period of insurgency in the Philippines.
And how does this all...
I want to say that was not secured until after 1910, and that started in 1904.
The Philippines aren't ours today.
No, but it was an American territory. It was independent after by World War II.
We have an air base there, though, don't we?
Yeah, but and then it became occupied by Japan. MacArthur liberated it, and then it was independent after 1946. But we attempted empire in the early 1900s. And by the end of World War I, it was obvious that maybe that wasn't the best course of action, because folks don't like to be occupied unless you're going to establish, unless you're an emperor and you're using local government, provincial or local forms of government, to administer the empire, much like the Romans did or the British did. Then you can't impose the imperial culture on the native culture and expect to succeed. It doesn't work. It didn't work in 1904, for example.
So that's similar to what Bush is doing now with Iraq and Iraq.
Well, if you read Project for New American Century, the thinking was that the Iraqis will greet us with bouquets and chocolates and...
They can't stand us.
Well, no, because the thought was, well, once we bring American democracy, once we liberate them, they will want American brand democracy. And very quickly, they will be buying minivans and shopping at Walmart and eating McBagdad sandwiches.
McBagdad, that's terrible.
And Mecca-Cola. And they will look just like Iraqi Americans, only they'll feel liberated and grateful. Well, no. What dictators like Hussein or Milosevic do is they realize they are ruling or they're governing a multi-ethnic area, and if you let them have their independence, then you would have to have an independent Sunni, an independent Shiite, an independent Kurdistan. Well, when you're given this boundary and you have to govern it, then what do you do? So you end up with strongmen like Hussein or Milosevic, and they're horrible, evil men. But unless you're willing to give these independent ethnic regions their self-determination, what's the alternative?
Civil war.
Civil war until they get it. And those lessons of history were not apparently learned, were not won by Rumsfeld and Cheney.
Okay, so let's go back.
You're not going to post this.
I'm not?
No.
Why not?
It's too rambling.
Well, I was just going to bring it back to relating the 1880s elections to the current...
Well, we were in the same space where you had a handful of chief executive officers. The Vanderbilts, Rockefellers, Carnegies, Conklings, these... big money people, they ran the banks, they ran the railroads, they ran the oil industry. They were funding both political parties, with more money going to one party than the other. So back then it was the Republican Party.
Okay, I won't post this, but let me ask you a question then. Because actually I'm going to make you record stuff this weekend. But then, actually, this doesn't interest me just slightly a little bit here. Yes, it actually made me think, and I have a question for you.
You told me you were bored in the kitchen.
I know, but it just made me think for just a second. Okay, you know how Cheney was the CEO of Halliburton, and
yeah.
Halliburton has profited tremendously because of his being in the administration.
Yes.
Were there corporations like that at the time that were profiting hugely by government contracts based on the administration at the time?
Yes.
Then cronyism. It really is really like the...
Cronyism. Well, these administrations are filled with cronies from these big pockets. So Hayes, for example, Rutherford Hayes, one of the least effective presidents, he thought, well, as I am simply the business manager. So he felt it's up to Congress to reform. So nothing was done. And so... he was voted out of office, but then it was, you know, Harrison. Well, Harrison didn't really do much of anything except give jobs to cronies and patrons. And then Cleveland came to... Grover Cleveland, probably more effective than Hayes or Harrison. Garfield. And Garfield was another boardroom president. He was assassinated. Here comes Arthur. Chester Arthur brought in the civil service... examination. So you at least had to pass a test. You had to be qualified. Well, they didn't like him. So the mugwumps and the stalwarts didn't support him, so they voted for Cleveland. So you go back and forth to the candidate who did the most for the big pockets.
The ones that brought in the
most
cash.
In the meantime, immigrants were flooding Ellis Island. Well, what did they do when they got here? So they lived in the ghettos.
Slums, yeah.
They worked in the sweatshops. They lived on 50 cents, you know, a week or whatever. Their children went to public schools. They didn't have textbooks. They went home and they finished the jobs that weren't done in the sweatshops. Their teachers tied them to their desk. I mean, so it wasn't until Jacob Riis and other journalists like him, they took these photographs. These were published in the journals of the day. It wasn't until Teddy Roosevelt became president, and these photographs were published, and these accounts finally, the American public realized, this is pathetic. But this had been, this was 30 years later.
Yeah.
You know, before anyone did anything about it.
That was a huge time of reform, because isn't that about the time that Upton Sinclair wrote the, I just had the title in my head, The Jungle?
Yeah.
About the whole meat packing.
The abuses of the meat packing industry, the impact of yellow journalism, the superficiality of it all, the American political process. I mean, T.R. was a true progressive. There was a lot of reform done there.
We need someone like him today, right?
And he was a Republican. But he would not
but
be a Republican
it's not the party.
Today.
I was going to say, it's not the same party that it was then.
He had a black man. Now, granted, it was Booker T. Washington and the, you know, the protocols in regard to black men and white men, you know, he didn't walk through the front door of the White House. But he was the first American president to meet with a black political leader of the day.
I don't think the Republican Party changed until the mid-40s.
No, I would say in the past 20 years, the Republican Party has become what it is today.
Oh, I'm thinking more like, I was thinking like 60s on.
No, you're thinking, well, I'm thinking of the realignments that occurred when Southern Democrats became Republicans. They were Dixiecrats. Ronald Reagan became president. And he spoke their language.
He spoke
the welfare
religion.
Queens sitting on their porches waiting for the paycheck. He spoke their language. And so I think what we have now has been since 1980.
Definitely with the Reagan. Do I have? I don't have.
So Southerners who call themselves Republicans are really Southern Democrats from the 1930s.
I'm going to stop this now. I think I've recorded enough to listen and find out if I can hear your voice.
So, boys and girls, that's all for today's show. I hope you enjoyed that lecture from the boyfriend. As you heard, it kind of ended abruptly because I was just testing the binaural microphones, but it was fun and it obviously worked out. Hopefully the boyfriend won't be too mad because I'm playing that and he told me not to, but then said it would be okay if I edited, so I did. I'm hoping to talk on tomorrow's show. I have a couple stories to tell and a couple emails to talk about, and I hope to be able to connect at some point with Michael from the QCast Connecticut, because we're going to have some book talk. So I'm not sure if that will happen on Friday's show or not, but you'll just have to tune in and see. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I think that's all. So I hope you enjoyed the show, and that's all for today. And until next time, boys and girls, bye.
Archer Ray.